all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, June 7th, National Chocolate Ice Cream Day, in case you're tracking that kind of thing. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Congressman Mark Pocan in just moments. Then at the bottom of the hour, State Assembly Rep. Tip McGuire, a member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, with an update on the state budget. And with that, let me turn our attention to Congressman Mark Pocan, who joins us now. Congressman, nice to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us again on Up North News Radio.
I'm glad to be here, Pat.
Let's start with the most frequent, most important thing that has been worked on recently by Congress, and that, of course, would be the debt limit deal. Later, we're going to get into the talk about, you know, maybe banning TikTok. We'll talk about Pride Month, a few other topics here as well. But the debt limit deal was the main thing. It was one of those moments where there were people on the left, such as yourself, and people on the right, such as Congressman Tom Tiffany, who voted against what ultimately passed. I'm pretty much guessing for very distinct reasons. So why don't you tell me first your own impression of the final agreement and then your vote against it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I mean, we should have had to have an agreement, period. For 86 times, I think it is, in our country's history, we lifted the debt ceiling for a period of time. When you appropriated funds, it automatically lifted. That was changed in about 2011 when John Boehner was around. That's why we're back to this weird dance again. Three times we lifted it under President Trump. I mean, it's the analogy, Pat, is that if you sign a mortgage, you don't get to decide whether every month you're going to mail the check, right? Because if you don't pay your mortgage, you lose your home and you destroy your credit. It's no different for the United States. So we shouldn't have even been in the position that we had to negotiate anything, much less the budget, environmental law, go down the list, a whole bunch of other things that, you know, the Republicans basically took hostages for in order to do this. Having said that, my biggest complaint was, as a member of the Appropriations Committee, not everything that was promised was in the bill, in particular $58 billion for non-defense discretionary spending. So Republicans were claiming that they've got it down to 22 levels of funding, which for 2 months, Democrats have been railing against would be a 22% cut to programs like Meals on Wheels and veterans, et cetera. They did add about $13 billion from the 22 levels, but that left a $58 billion gap. That's not in the bill. It's in a side agreement, which, by the way, we can't read. We don't have a side agreement to read on that. So as an appropriator, I am hoping on hopes and wishes, kind of like Wimpy, gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today, that $58 billion will be there. And I did ask the White House how they guarantee a side deal that's not in the actual vote would be there. And unfortunately, the answer was, well, the House may not put it in their budget. We'll have to find out, but we'll try to make sure the Senate does. So my problem was much of the agreement, especially the part that I deal with as an appropriator in my day-to-day basis, isn't in the bill. And if it's not in the bill, and if it doesn't become a reality, that means cuts, severe cuts to things like Meals on Wheels and healthcare, education, housing, et cetera. And since that is my, when you're an appropriator, that's your main and only committee you have. That's the stuff I care about the most in serving on the Labor, Health, Human Services and Education Subcommittee. Those are all programs that likely would be greatly affected. So for me, it was, I couldn't see the guarantee there. On top of that, when we are writing budgets again that aren't part of this agreement in 26, the baseline budget will be that 22 level budget plus $13 billion, which means we'll be about 30-35% down from where defense spending will be, which was left untouched. And it will be very hard to then fund those very programs that I think people in Wisconsin really count on. So for me, for very wonky but very important reasons around the priorities of that money was why I voted against it.
Well, look, the fact of the matter is that the amount of trust across the aisle was never great to begin with.
Right.
And so I don't think a lot of folks would fault you for thinking that maybe you'd like to see even more in writing. And so that makes complete sense from the standpoint of somebody who's on the Appropriations Committee of, you know, do you trust the handshake agreements? Having said that, though, where are your thoughts on President Biden at reaching an agreement with Speaker McCarthy and the compliments that he paid him? was that, you know, statesmanship that involves a level of trust that comes with the presidency? Or is it more like some of his critics saying that he should have gotten more in writing and he got played and things like that? What's your own assessment of the how the president performed in this?
Yeah, so everything I saw in the polls, if we didn't lift the debt ceiling and we had an economic collapse, then it would have been very dire if that would have happened. That's why the Republicans were really playing this game of chicken. Was a very dangerous game. The president would have got blamed, not Kevin McCarthy, not the House Republicans. It would have been the president. So this was important for the president to get done for a lot of reasons. The problem is, again, I don't vote on side agreements. We don't get a chance to do that. I vote on bills. And if the language isn't in a bill in front of me, I don't do my constituents, I think, a service by voting on something that I hope and wish will happen. I vote on bills. But the president, I think, you know, believes he has a good faith agreement. My only concern is, as you just said, you know, Kevin McCarthy is the least speaker-like speaker we've had since I've been here, because he gave away all of his powers in order to have that name on a business card earlier this year. And if he can't hold his rather crazy caucus together, then, you know, $58 billion of programs for seniors and veterans and, you know, kids needing, you know, lunches, you know, all of those things are going to be the ones that don't happen. So I think the president did it based on good faith, like you normally would have with people. I just think I know these people maybe a little more, having watched them, and I'm not sure if I would trust them in the same way. I hope the president's right.
More with Congressman Mark Bocan after this break, and a check on weather. You're up north. Joey Weimer hit the game-winning single in the 10th inning to lift the Milwaukee Brewers to a 4-3 victory over the Baltimore Orioles on Tuesday night. Time for our weatherology forecast. Meteorologist Michael Cairo joins us now to tell us how things are looking all across the state of Wisconsin. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, and it's going to be a very nice couple of days coming up as cool Canadian high pressure looks to build in from the north, keeping us very comfortable temperature and humidity-wise as well. Seeing a few spotty light showers and sprinkles exiting far southwestern portions of the state as we speak, especially in areas to the south of about Richland Center down through Dodgeville and Monroe, but even that activity should be exiting over the next hour or two, giving us a dry forecast across pretty much all of the remainder of the state here for today. Some lingering clouds across the western half of Wisconsin, even though should clear out by this afternoon, giving us a good deal of sunshine and looking very comfortable temperature-wise, middle to upper 70s pretty much for all of the state, except some of those locations right along the Lake Michigan shoreline will stick closer to the upper 60s to lower 70s by this afternoon. And for tonight, expecting partly cloudy skies. Those overnight low temperatures, pretty chilly across the far north. Rhinelander could even flirt with some upper 30s out there for tonight, but much of the remainder of the state in the upper 40s to lower 50-degree range. And Thursday, pretty much a carbon copy of today, looking for a good deal of sunshine statewide and still comfortable humidity-wise, middle to upper 70s for high temperatures there for tomorrow. By the time we get to your Friday, though, a weak cold frontal boundary beginning to approach from the northwest does bring a slight chance for some isolated showers and storms by the afternoon for areas like Amory, Baldwin, over to near Eau Claire, as well as Park Falls. The remainder of the state, though, is looking to stay dry yet. A couple of degrees warmer there on Friday, could approach some lower 80s for high temperatures for Madison, over to near La Crosse, as well as Eau Claire. Still some 70s for eastern portions of the state. Saturday, we'll be dodging some scattered showers and storms pretty much for all the state of Wisconsin. Definitely could use the rain across the region. Those fire dangers starting to tick up into the high category here for today. So fingers crossed we do at least pick up some measurable rainfall there. But again, kind of bad timing for the start of your weekend. I think as far as your Sunday forecast, though, the bulk of that rain a chance mainly across southeastern portions of the state. Much of the remainder looking to dry things out there for Sunday. And we'll ease back to some 70s for highs to wrap up your weekend.
All right, meteorologist Michael Cairo. Michael, thank you. Have a great day. And we're back now with Congressman Mark Pocan about the debt ceiling. Would you support preemptive action to eliminate this step in the future? There was talk about the 14th Amendment or minting a trillion-dollar coin, or, you know, where are your thoughts on whether this kind of disagreement should even exist in the first place?
Yeah, this is one of the dumb ideas that can only come out of Washington, D.C., is to keep this. It was created in 1917 when Congress wanted to put a check on how much we were investing in World War I. So they put a limit. And now we're still living with something a century later that doesn't necessarily have any of the original reasons. So my first session, I was on the budget committee, and back then I said this was something stupid because, like that mortgage analogy, you don't get to make that decision after you've agreed to spend money whether or not you're going to mail the checks. So absolutely, I would also support exploration of the 14th Amendment. I would support exploration of a $1 trillion coin, whatever. This doesn't stop spending, right? This only lifts the debt ceiling to match the spending you had. And I think the spin Republicans put out there was pretty effective in convincing people that it's something it wasn't, because, I mean, let's face it, they're better at lying. And they did a pretty good job in doing that.
Let's turn our attention now to members of Congress, amongst others, who have been targeting the social platform TikTok, which has in some kind of paperwork, corporate convoluted way, Chinese ownership. And I think in my mind, that's probably what has attracted attention more than anything else. But when we're talking about a social platform that may have some foreign ownership and Americans putting their data on there, there are people who would like to see either it curtailed or banned outright. When you do hear from constituents that maybe ask you to support a ban or what you think about it, what do you tell them?
Yeah, so the vast majority of people who reach out to us in my district don't want a ban on TikTok. I mean, let's face it, 150 million people in the country are on TikTok. That's a lot of people. But what should happen is on every single social media platform, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we should have data privacy, and we shouldn't allow them just to take our data and sell it to anyone. There should be greater regulation over that. And that's what I'm for. But simply banning a platform, and you're exactly right, it's the rhetoric of, oh, it's a Chinese company. Well, you know, does that mean we're not going to buy iPhones anymore, or laptops made in China, or most everything that's made in China? Again, that's not being proposed. And yet, as you know, Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin is the chair of a committee right now to talk about the U.S. and not in China, but in the Chinese Communist Party, right? Because that's how you keep defense budgets up, is by having an enemy, and we got to have someone that we're afraid of. And right now, Vladimir Putin's kind of BFFs with Donald Trump. So we're not allowed to look at the Soviet Union, even though they've invaded a sovereign country like Ukraine with a negative light. But China is the current enemy that we have to keep paying defense contractors lots and lots of money to buy more and more weapons that may work or may not. There's a lot of that that's part of this discussion that goes beyond the issue that I think we should talk about, which is just protect our data, period, across all social media platforms.
Well, and it always seems to me, and folks, I think, have long since forgotten about this, but, you know, there are social media companies here at home that probably deserve greater scrutiny. You think of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica and the role, to the degree that that helped, you know, Donald Trump do targeting or helped other, you know, foreign bodies target voters in 2016. It certainly seems there's more that could be done in terms of Americans' data privacy there than something where people are dancing on a video.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, TikTok is known for what? Yeah, it depends when, but I remember a few months ago when the Wednesday dance was like every video that popped up. You know, it depends what you watch is what you get. But I don't know if that's going to bring down the country. You know, it was the rhetoric. And then that awful hearing where you saw members of Congress showing their lack of knowledge about technology that was just cringeworthy. You know, we used to have a nonpartisan agency that advised us on technology pre-Newt Gingrich, and he got rid of it. We desperately need that again, because no offense to my colleagues, but many of them are in their 70s and 80s, and they're not exactly rip-roaring through social media to understand it enough, and yet they're governing it. And you know, I do think that disconnect causes a lot of problems.
You mentioned Congressman Gallagher from up in Green Bay. It reminds me that one of your newer colleagues, Congressman Derek Van Orden from the 3rd Congressional District, is on the Agriculture Committee, and they're working on a new farm bill. And while that's away from your Appropriations Committee, it is a bill that involves a massive amount of spending. So just from your overview, distant from the Ag Committee, but you know what Congressman Van Orden is going to be working on, do you hear anything that gives you reason to think that this is going to be a bill that in a divided Congress is going to get done and done well for Wisconsin farmers?
Well, we have to get it done, right? I mean, you have to have that. So I am worried, because this Congress has a lot of problems passing bills. That's why this week we're dealing with gas stoves after the national debt ceiling, rather than actually dealing with, you know, things that are important to the country. So Hakeem Jeffries appointed a special group to kind of work on the farm bill outside of the agricultural committee. And he asked me to be on that. So I think there's nine of us on a task force on this. So I'm going to be dealing with that along with Sharice Davids representing the Midwest, as well as other members around the country. You know, it's a unique bill. You know, part of it is things like supplemental nutrition assistance program for people more, you could argue, in the urban areas. And then there's the traditional agricultural parts that are for people more in the rural areas. But part of the magic of the bill is those are combined to make sure you have enough votes across all of Congress and both parties to pass a farm bill. If they decide to be the opposite of, I guess, what is woke by their definition, and put a bunch of poison pills in there, it's going to be hard to see that go forward. So I would hope that everyone realizes, you know, food is the least partisan thing I can think of, and we need to treat it that way. We have to respect, especially family farmers that we have a lot of in Wisconsin versus the corporate farmers. And I think that's an important priority. But we also got to realize that programs like SNAP are probably the number one program that keep kids out of poverty in this country. And at $6 a day, no one is living large off the amount of money they're getting with food assistance. And I think if we take it all into perspective properly, hopefully we can get a bill to come out.
Congressman, I know you noted the manufactured outrage about gas stoves, but I have to bring you up to date that one of your other colleagues, Congressman Tom Tiffany, has been going after the potential targeting of chocolate milk in our schools by the USDA. I mean, we've got to be mad about something always. And it's chocolate
milk. Every member of Congress from Wisconsin is advocating to make sure that we're allowing dairy in schools. Only Tom Tiffany can screw it up as much as he is, because he's trying to make it so partisan that he's trying to, you know, sometimes things like milk aren't as partisan as you think. Seriously, screwing up an issue that could affect a lot of people in Wisconsin because he wants to, you know, win a potential primary to maybe run for the U.S. Senate. And, you know, I hope he will focus on dairy as opposed to his derriere.
You know, when we talk about manufactured outrage, though, and I want to end on Pride Month, because, again, there are some people that they feel like they always have to be angry at something. Somebody has to be the them. And we talked to, you know, State Assembly Rep Lee Snodgrass yesterday about the importance of having something like Pride Month and allowing love to be, shall we say, a bit more assertive in its messaging. I would guess you agree that that's as essential, not just during a Pride Month, but all year round, given what the environment is like out there these days.
Yes, you know, this is one where there was a great article about 2 months ago in the New York Times that folks in the conservative political element of the Republican Party were throwing spaghetti against the wall, literally. What's the next issue to enrage people? And what they found is, and we had this happen to the gay and lesbian community a couple decades ago, is not everyone knows someone who's transgender. It used to be not everyone knew someone who's gay or lesbian. So they were passing all those marriage bills, remember, defining marriage between a man and a woman, and now marriage equality is 70%+ support across the country. The same is true right now. They're doing this against trans people, especially trans kids, because they don't know someone. And, you know, I think the best telling example of this was in Utah. The Republican governor vetoed a bill that said trans girls couldn't participate in sports. And he did it for a lot of equality reasons, but he also shared the statistics in Utah. There are, out of all the kids in school in Utah, there are 4 trans kids, 1 trans girl that was playing in sports. So you all these legislatures passing laws essentially are completely manufacturing an issue to scare people rather than you know, really take on the important issues of the day. And this article talked about that, you know, throwing the spaghetti on the wall, finding that next political issue. So, you know, fortunately, Wisconsin was the first state in the nation to have a gay and lesbian civil rights bill, 1982, by the way, signed by a Republican governor, Lee Sherman Dreyfus, before the issue was politicized. And I think, you know, we will probably keep much of that tradition through this. Because believe it or not, the Wisconsin legislature has introduced far fewer of these bills than a lot of other states. And, you know, hopefully this is just their most recent way of getting the base to be excited in the Republican Party. Certain elements, I really should say. It's not even the Republican Party. It's very small elements. And once we get past this and they realize they may know someone who's transgender, or they get the chance to see what these bills are really about, that's when Republican governors start to veto stuff like this. And I think more people will understand that treating people equally is really the value that we should all have.
Amen to that. Congressman Mark Pocan, thanks for spending time with us today.
Of course. Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it.
State Representative Chip McGuire coming up next. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We will have Motherhood Monday for you in just a second, but first we've got to do a little good news, bad news, good news thing for you. Initially, we had a winner of the Brewers tickets, somebody who knew the team name for the Eau Claire, UW-Eau Claire sports teams. And then she called back and said that she was going to go to the game with a certain friend who can't go now, so she wanted to let somebody else use the tickets who could go. So we'll just keep the question right out there, because again, I know that everybody listening on our new stations up in the Chippewa Valley and Amory and Hayward, and you're all screaming the answer at the radio, but you probably can't get down to Milwaukee for a ball game on Wednesday. So this is really geared more toward, you know, the folks closer to Milwaukee, our Waukesha and our Madison area listeners. If you know the name for the UW-Eau Claire sports teams, and you call us at 844-967-2789. We've got a couple of tickets for Wednesday night's game, Brewers against Baltimore. If we don't give them away here, we'll turn them over to Chad Holmes or one of the other shows and let them give it away. But we'd love to have you get them if you could take the chance. All right, Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy are with us as they are every other Monday from Motherhood for Good. Rachel Mays, the assistant city attorney for Green Bay, is their guest this week. Kate, Nicole, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We are at Pride Month here in June, and we understand that that can raise a host of issues from the parenting standpoint. There is so much that gets said from the political standpoint, and some of it quite ugly, shall we say. And we're here more to talk about the original issues that are involved here, whether it's from a parenting standpoint or from kids or their friends or what have you. So Nicole, Kate, kind of a jump ball for you as far as how you decided to break down the topic for us today.
Well, I think it's such a large issue. It's not nearly enough time to jump in and do it, but we kind of decided to approach it from three different buckets, if you will. It's, hey, parenting as a member of the LGBTQ community, what that encompasses and how, daily life affects you in today's climate. Then the second bucket is, what if your child comes out and parenting a child who identifies as part of the LGBTQ plus community? And then finally, how can we as parents and moms be proper allies, and what can we be doing all day, every day, not just during Pride Month, to make sure that we are taking good care of the LGBTQ plus community?
All right. So, Kate, that takes that to you to introduce our guest.
I'm actually going to let Nicole introduce the guest, because I know they are actually pretty close and have been in communication lately. So, Nicole, take it away.
All you right. Bet. Well, so super, super, super excited. We knew we had our first Pride show during June. Rachel was the automatic thought and person we hope to have. So Rachel Mays will be our guest today, and the list of wonderful, wonderful accomplishments that would follow Rachel. I'll let Rachel pick how she wants to introduce herself. So take it away, Rachel.
Welcome. All right. Well, I'm a local attorney. I'm heavily involved in nonprofit work in the greater Green Bay area. I'm on the board of, I think it's 7 boards of directors. I'm a mom. I try to be involved with my kids however I can, whether that's, you know, attending baseball games or, you know, driving my daughter to Girl Scouts or whatever needs to happen. I think I'll just leave it at that. I don't need to dislocate my shoulder patting myself on the back.
We'll do it for you. Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about the work that you're doing in the nonprofit sector, especially in this space, especially up in Green Bay and the climate there, and how that work is affecting your family and your community, and kind of just the importance of Pride Month and how it's going up there?
Sure. Yeah, so I do run a peer group for transgender adults and non-binary adults. I am a board of directors member for the Bay Area Council on Gender Diversity. And I take whatever opportunities I can to speak to queer kids in the greater Green Bay area, whether that's with GSA groups or at LGBTQ summits, just to let them know that they can be themselves here in Wisconsin, here in Northeast Wisconsin, and that they don't have to flee to, liberal strongholds like Portland or New York or LA or Boston in order to live their best lives and show up to school and to jobs and to activities as their whole self. So just getting in front of kids and, you know, giving them space to, you know, express themselves is really important. I think as an LGBTQ parent, there are some struggles and challenges that I face and that my wife faces. I'm still getting used to saying wife. Just got married a little over 2 weeks ago. So, we went on our family moon down in Florida, and it was tough having a conversation with my four-year-old about why she was going up to everybody and saying, you know, I'm from Wisconsin and I have three moms, and having a conversation about how going up to someone from Tennessee and having that conversation may not be the best idea. And how do you couch that language to a four-year-old that my relationship with my wife is somehow different than a straight cisgender couple who got married, and how people see that differently without othering our relationship or making it seem somehow negative. So there's conversations like that, and even just going out to restaurants. If you have a middle-aged man and woman with a 10, an 8, and a 4-year-old sitting in a booth, at the end of the meal, I don't know too many servers who would ask, is this all together? Probably 95% of the time when we go out to eat, we get asked, is this together? Or is this on one check? It's just little things that people may take for granted that they don't have to address on a daily basis, and especially with kids and in front of kids. So it's just a different view on our family dynamic.
And it certainly sounds like there isn't a right answer there, which simply reaffirms the need for peer groups, for communication, because again, there's no one right answer, but if you at least talk about situations or contingencies, you know, what worked, what didn't work in any given area, which frankly is a lot of what parenting is altogether. There's no one recipe book, or, you know, Nicole, Kate, and I would, you know, wouldn't have nearly as many, you know, gray hairs and lines and things that I have, and someday they will. Is the peer group, tell me more about that. Is it a, you know, kind of a large thing that you do? Is there a lot of one-on-one, small group?
So I attend a peer group that is at the Napoli's Lounge. The second longest running gay bar in Wisconsin is right here in Green Bay. And my friend Martha organizes and runs that peer group. And it's just an opportunity for people to show up as they are. And it's not getting into, you know, the heavy baggage of therapy. I mean, we certainly, discuss some heavy issues and heavy matters as friends, but it's specifically not like a therapy session or a support group. We can show up and have space to be ourselves. The peer group I just started it back in November, and we're still growing, but it's it's at a coffee shop, and it's via a monthly Zoom meeting. So we've got two different times where we can touch base with each other. And it's just to have someone to lean on during tough times, to celebrate successes and achievements and good times, and to not have to explain your identity at the outset of every conversation. You can just show up and be you and talk about the weather, or you know, what fun things do you have planned for Pride Month, or you know, what are you doing to take care of yourself and to show a little self-care. So it's it runs a full gamut of different types of conversations, but it's just a group of like-minded people, similarly situated, who are just trying to connect and have someone to lean on, and have a social network that can help support you.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I love what you mentioned of doing that work, you know, up in Green Bay, up in, like, having groups like that more up in northern Wisconsin, because obviously we do have Madison and Milwaukee here are very liberal leaning, but folks should know that they don't have to flee, and they don't have to go to those bigger cities, and they can seek out groups like yours that are doing really important work there and get involved and feel seen and heard. And I just love that. And I have to really quickly say congratulations. That is so exciting. What does, like, true good allyship look like to you? And I know, I just have to say, this is probably different to everybody. So knowing you're not, you know, speaking for the entire community, but what does that look like to you and your family? What can people do to show up for the community in a helpful, genuine way?
Well, I think from a family dynamic, it's just understanding that families are different, and different doesn't mean better or worse. I mean, some kids have one parent, whether that's a mom or a dad. Some kids have two parents, and they have a mom and a dad, or they have two dads or two moms. And then, I mean, the different types of family styles, parents divorce and remarry. So some kids may have three parents or four parents. And just understanding that, you know, as long as kids are in an environment where they're loved and supported, like, that's what matters. The best interest of the kids is what matters. So for the parents out there who have, you know, LGBTQ kids, unconditional love means unconditional, and supporting your kid through thick and thin, and giving them space to, when they enter the dating scene, you know, if they bring home a boyfriend or a girlfriend, instead of grilling them on the gender of the person that they're drawn to, asking questions like, does this person treat you well? Does this person make you happy? Like, do you have commonalities? Do you feel good when you're in their presence? And focusing on that aspect of relationships. More in general, for allyship, is speaking up when LGBTQ folks aren't in the room. I think that there are a lot of conversations that happen when, you know, uncles or grandparents or neighbors or, you know, parent-teacher organizations or whoever it may be, get together, and they think that they're in a safe space, and, you know, they make comments that either use LGBTQ folks as the butt of a joke or as a punchline, or just making off-color comments, and standing up to say those comments, they're not cool, they're not acceptable, they're not edgy, and just, you know, I know, Nicole, you like to ask people to repeat themselves.
That's my favorite. That always works. I don't get the joke. Can you say that again? Or, I didn't hear you. What was that? It works 99% of the time.
Nicole, that's amazing. That is
again.
I really could have used that the other day at a particular watering hole that I was at. And instead, they just kind of saw that I was giving them a look, and it stopped that real quick.
The look, but usually accompanies it. I'll preface that.
I don't doubt that. And that's the thing. That's where we can be. Sometimes do the most good is not defending somebody when they're right there, but defending people that, you know, we love and support all the time, wherever we are, whether it's having one of these little, you know, lapel pins that says you can be yourself with me, or, you know, attending an event, or just being there, not even as a peer group, sometimes just as a friend. So Rachel, Nicole, and Kate, it's so great to see you. Thank you so much for your done, for your leadership, and just for your friendship to others. It means so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, the pleasure's all ours. We'll wrap up today's conversation in just a bit. You're up north. Dean Martin.
How lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head?
There you go, kids. That's what rock and roll was before those darn Beatles came along. Melissa Kay joins us from locally grown radio WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. Hello, Melissa.
Good morning.
Dean Martin was born this day in 1917. He passed away in 1995. Dean Martin is one of those who he kind of has the Elvis thing going, in that a lot of people later just remember him as, well, was basically an old drunk. You know, he played that whole shtick about, you know, being an alcoholic. A lot of people are kind of forgetting now, in his younger days, he was like quite the swinger, the sex symbol. You know, his nickname was the King of Cool, Dean Martin. A lot of people wanted to be Dean Martin back then.
I've been Dean Martin.
You've been Dean Martin?
Well, kind of. I was in a Dean Martin show years ago.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well, and you don't mean literally, like you weren't one of the gold diggers, the name of his background dancers. No.
We did a parody of Dean Martin and singing and songs and the alcohol.
That's so cool. That's awesome. all right. So there are a couple of birthdays. I've mentioned one already. I mentioned that Tom Jones turns 83 today. And yet for this birthday and the next birthday, we've got the same song to play. Here's Tom Jones.
You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on.
Now, at this point, I forget where Tom Jones was, probably in his 50s when he recorded this remake. And I mean, it had such a great groove to it. It was such a take on the original. The original is shared by somebody who shared his birthday. This is the anniversary of the birth of Prince.
You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on.
I think, Melissa, it's fair to say different stylings of the same classic song.
You know, I gotta say, I like Tom's better.
I'm in the minority.
You're in the minority on that?
Yeah, I that's one of my favorite Prince songs.
Yeah. Well, and as you rightly note, we've been talking about birth names and unusual names. Prince actually was his birth name. Is it Prince Rogers Nelson?
Yep.
Okay. Born this day in 1958, sadly passed away in 2016. Now, Melissa, there's a third person who shares the birthday. New presidential candidate and former Vice President Mike Pence turns 64 today, and here's his version of Kiss. No, wait, he never did that. Could you imagine?
Maybe he should.
Oh, I don't know if Mother would let him, but that would... Oh my gosh, the parody we could do. How Mike Pence would have to change the lyrics of Pence, of Kiss, in order to sing it. By the way, in 1993 on this day, it was Prince's 35th birthday. And that was the day he changed his stage name to a symbol. Remember that phase, if you will? Yeah. We never did figure out how to pronounce that.
How do you say it?
Because we didn't want to.
Just became the artist formerly known as Prince.
Exactly. The musical Grease, long before the classic movie with John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, it was a play. It debuted on Broadway this day in 1972. John Denver had the number one hit this day in 1975.
Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me can't hack. Thoroughly to rise, early in a sack. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Another one of those songs that folks might have thought was kind of goofy at first, and then it grew on them. Again, you're going to tap your toe. On that same day, 1975, Sony launches Betamax, the first video cassette recorder format, and I think seven people owned it, but it was all the rage. Bill Hader turns 45 today, formerly of Saturday Night Live and Barry. Priscilla Presley opened up Elvis's mansion Graceland to the public this day in 1982, and who could forget the glory, the terror, the gaudiness of the green shag carpet in Elvis's jungle room. Here's one where we got to make Aaron feel old. Actor Michael Cera is 35 today. How are you doing with that, Aaron?
It's fine. We're all good here.
We're not troubled at all. Let's see. Stone Temple Pilots released their second album, Purple, this day in 1994. It included Interstate Love Song. And on this day in 2004, Back in Black by AC/DC was certified double diamond for selling over 20 million copies in the U.S., only the sixth album to do so. Melissa, would you consider yourself any kind of a musical expert on the bongos?
No.
No, I don't know that anybody does. But Aaron and I noticed a trend, and so we thought we would share this with folks. Let's start with, this is the intro to the Devil's Advocates radio show afternoons here on Civic Media. Of course, we'd be the Stones and Sympathy for the Devil. Then we've got the theme to the Todd Alba Show, which is by George Michael. And now we're going to preview the new Stu Daniels show that premieres just over an hour from now on many of these Civic Media stations with Ronnie Laws's Always There. I'm noticing a trend here.
A little bit.
Which I think is kind of cool because we're like, wait a minute. I did not know so many songs had that kind of a percussive start to it. So we tried to think of some others. The OJs had one.
And this one is the theme song for Town Call, another new Civic Media show.
So they just don't stop. Another Civic Media show.
I thought I recognized it.
Featuring the bongos. So now we need to find out if we can get some radio hosts that could take on some of these others. For example, we talk to Mark Jacob down in Chicago every now and then, so occasionally we'll pick a Chicago song like this one. See, we got Heartbeat by the group War. Little bongo action on this one. And let's come up with one more. Curtis Mayfield had Move On Up. And I know there were plenty of others, but We just thought that was rather noteworthy that if you've got a song with a nice little bongo intro, you know, you may live in radio immortality as a result. Mm. Now, speaking of radio immortality, what's happening at locally grown radio? You're with your new morning shows, 7 to 8 on our
country station, 105.5 WIRI. Mm-hmm. And it's the Sunrise Show. So we talk about country music history, you know, just have fun, listen to country music. And then we move over to the WFHR studio and do our morning show there from 8 to 10. And then our morning magazine segment has moved to 3 to 4 in the afternoon. Today, they're spending the whole hour with Wood County Sheriff Becker.
That's awesome. All right. Well, yeah. Melissa, good luck with all that. Thanks for playing along as we banged on the bongos for a few minutes here.
You know, I banged on the bongos yesterday at the park with my little friend. So it wasn't musical, though.
You are too much. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
You too.
Congressman Mark Pocan on the other side of this break. You're up north.